Good evening. I'd like to welcome all of you this evening. We're so glad to have Millie Fudge, who is our Emergency Preparedness Director for Clark County, to give us an update on the Starbucks fire that happened on March 6th. And we want to congratulate Millie because she just got an award at the KEMA conference of Outstanding Professional
Emergency Management.
Yeah. So we're they gave her a plaque, and then they took it back because they want to come out and present it out here. So she's going to get that. Okay, so she's going to kind of condense this down so it doesn't take 2 or 3 hours. So, but you're welcome to ask questions, and she will cover as much as she can. So thanks for coming.
Thank you all for being here. I want to know, can all of you hear me right now? In the back, can you hear me? The first rule is at some point in time the air conditioner comes on and you can't hear me, raise your hand. And there's a microphone over here that I'll have to use. Okay, but I don't like to use it very well. The second rule is, if I'm going too fast or you have questions, stop me and ask questions. Okay? Pretty informal. This PowerPoint is actually, I timed it one time and it's about 2 hours long. So I'm condensing it down so I have to skip some and make it about 30 minutes. Never done anything in 30 minutes in my life, but we're going to try it, okay? So if I see you start to leave, I know that I've gone too long. All right? Okay. So anyway, thanks for letting me speak today and talk about the fire. And I hope that I show you or talk to you about some things that you weren't aware of. Because there was a lot of behind the scenes happening that most people don't know about. Okay, so I would like to begin. And we're going to start with March 6th, the Starbucks fire, Clark County Starbucks fire. And we were paged, this is the weather for the day. We get these several days in advance. And this was really ominous, and all the fire departments and the emergency managers knew that this day something was going to happen because of that purple, because of the extreme danger, because of the 50 mile an hour plus winds, the humidity going down to 6%, just set up for prime target, and we have all this fuel out in the country, this grassland. So it was prime weather for a fire. This is day two, where it's not quite as extreme, but it's still very significant on the 7th. So we were all aware. Now, if you look at this, this is March 6th, and right in here in the middle of the day, it dropped from 80% clear down to 10%, down to 6%, down to 5% humidity. That means that it's really too dry and that fires can happen, okay? And over here then you have the mile an hour, like 44 mile an hour winds with a gust of 52. It was setting the stage to be just wrong. At 11:34 on that Monday morning, we were paged, fire departments and emergency management was paged to go to Beaver, Oklahoma, because that's where the fire started. And so we all headed down that way. Ashland Fire, Inglewood Fire, and Emergency Management. And Brandy was my co-pilot. So we all headed that way for the Starbucks fire. We get down to the county line and figure out that we're not going down to Oklahoma because those big clouds of smoke were headed our way. The fire was too close. We get down to Frosty Ettinger's house, which is over into Meade County a few miles. And the firemen figure out at that point in time that all they're going to do is protect houses and people. Because that monster was coming and there is absolutely no way to stop it. So we parked in between Frosty's houses. And the firemen went around the houses and watered them down, foamed them down, and then we all sat in between the houses waiting for the fire to go over. And that's true pucker power, I'm going to tell you. Okay? But anyway, it went over Frosty's house, did not damage his houses. And then at 13, and this is military time, so at 1:45 it moved into Clark County. And they were protecting residents and homes. You know, the fire departments here have never had a fire that they couldn't get ahead of, that they couldn't control, that they couldn't get the best of until this one. And it's a little overwhelming. It's kind of brings you down to a different level. At 1:30 in the afternoon, we're still over there, and I called the sheriff's office, and I asked them, I said, call Mutual Aid, which is our surrounding counties. Call them, get some help now. And they called back, and sometimes I try during this, so forgive me, but they called back and they say there is absolutely no help available. Everybody's out fighting fires somewhere. We can't get you any help. So I called back and I said, okay, so go two counties out or three counties out. Get us some help because we don't have enough firemen. And she calls back and she says, there's nobody here to help you. There's nobody we can find to come and help you. These fire departments are on their own. That's a very humbling experience. At 1410 then, which is 210, the 283 was closed. This is just west of 283. This was what was coming. This is what we saw. How in the world do you ever get the best of that? And you don't. This is, after we left Frosty Edgar's, we went to Clausen's house, David Clausen's house. This is his house. And the firemen made a stand there to protect the buildings. It destroyed his big barn out there. But they phoned the house and they saved the house. At this point in time, here's another picture I want to show you. There's this. This is, you've probably seen this somewhere. This is Dave Clausen on his tractor, trying to keep the fire from his property. Eventually, he lost that tractor. Not here, but later on, the ranch hand, I believe, was on somewhere else on this tractor and this, and then it got bogged down in such a mud and couldn't get out, so they lost the tractor. At this point in time, this is where Brandy and I leave, because we know that we have to head up at EOC, Emergency Operations Center in Ashland. We're of no value out there. We've got to get command in the town so we can start setting up. So we leave Dave Clausen's and come into town. This green is smoke plume on the radar. This is a fire coming up, okay? These are other fires up here in Ford County and different places, but this is our fire coming at us. Mineola Fire was called to come down and help Ashland and Inglewood. And they started south of Mineola. They got to between I and J Road. There were some more fire breakouts there. So they never made it any further south than that. They made it over to Denton's house. And then there was another house east of there. So they started fighting the fire breaks there. Keep in mind, the wind is going 50 miles an hour from the southwest. So embers are flying. The fire is going faster than the firemen are. And now at almost 1 o'clock that day, the Weather Service puts out a bulletin. 30 mile an hour suggests 30 mile an hour from the southwest. Maybe gusting up to 55 to 60 mile an hour. That's their forecast for the afternoon. Then at 3:11, we called for an evacuation of the Ashland Health Center. And they immediately started evacuating the health center, the nursing home part, all of it. And they evacuated them down to Buffalo and to Coldwater. The problem is that when they got to Buffalo, the fire was going to before. So then they had to load them back up, and they had to take them on down to Woodford. But they had an excellent staff, and they got the job done, and they stayed with them until it was all over. So they should be commended. It was their drill for the year. And then at 3:20, we established the Emergency Operations Center, and I'll show you some pictures of that pretty quick. But every big disaster has to have an Emergency Operations Center somewhere. At 3:25, Inglewood evacuated, and they all just went down to Ditch Valley and stayed down there. Had kind of a camp out down there. But that's where their safe place was. And then Ashland was evacuated to the Coldwater High School. And there's a lot of things that we know after the fact that we should have maybe done different, but that's part of the learning process. And one of the things here we should have done was probably send them on to Pratt instead of Coldwater. What if the fire had gone on to Coldwater? It went to protection. They had to evacuate protection, so it might have gone on to Coldwater. So we should have sent them on further, and then they would have had a Walmart and some other facilities there. I mean, it really is important. When you're evacuated with no belongings, you need to have a place to go buy some. At every disaster, if you want state help, be it manpower, equipment, financial aid, any of those things, you have to call for a state declaration. And at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I called the state and told them that we needed help, that we wanted to do a state declaration. Later on, we put it in paper, pencil paper, but this is what started the ball rolling for state help. Okay, we also called Red Cross, and they started implementing their tree and trying to get us some help out here.
Melody, did you have the commissioners involved right then, or was that later?
Just about right then. We made those phone calls. Becky, do you remember what time we made those phone calls to the commissioners? It was.
We had to evacuate. We called the commissioners, and two of them were out of town. So it was, I mean, we were trying to get one of them down here to
be present.
So.
Oh, okay, sure. We called the commissioners. Becky, I think, called the commissioners right away when we were making the state declaration. And two of them were out of town, but we wanted one to come down to the EOC and be there. So we made an attempt to call them right away. Okay. I'm going to talk a minute about... I'm going to talk about the EOC because it's an emergency operation command. It involves several people, some of which are in here. But it involves, you have to have members of different facets of the community there. For instance, we had John Ketron there for law enforcement, and he was my backup. Becky Mishler was there, called her, she came right down, not knowing anything about what she was going to get into. But she came down, she was our financial officer. Brandy Fleming, Stacy Knowles, and Lindsay at the sheriff's office were our dispatchers. Allison Kuhn is our public information officer. She agreed to do that about a year ago, so we called her. Her job is to, I love her job, because when the media calls, and they were calling before 4 o'clock that day, then all I had to do was say, you need Allison, and I could hand it off. And she took care of media. She also had, the highway patrol showed up, and patrolman Lacey showed up, and he volunteered to help her. So the two of them manned the media for several days, did an excellent job. And then Kendall Kay called Kendall since he was the mayor, and he showed up immediately. He was there all through the night, the next day, and the next night. These people were very dedicated and very helpful and worked countless upon countless hours. Steve Elmore made the mistake of dropping by in the middle of the morning and wanted to know what he could do, and so we put him to work right away. But him working with United was a great benefit because They brought us phones for the IMTs. They brought us routers. They brought us food, barbecue. I mean, United was more than helpful. Then the last one that I don't have on here, but I should have had on here, was I found out through this event that I should have had the appraiser office there immediately, and I did not know that. But the appraiser helped after that day. They helped every day because we had to find properties. We had to know who lived where and what the legal description of the land was. Who better than an appraiser? You know? What the value of the land was. We had later on, we had the SBA come out and we did a tour and they wanted to look at that because they thought maybe they could get SBA loans. We didn't meet the criteria, so that didn't work, but the appraiser's office was very, very beneficial. Okay, and then also, in a big disaster, you have to have a check-in station. And we use T-cards. And every truck that comes in, every person that comes in to fight the fire, they have to have a T-card. And the T-card tells who they are, where they're from, what time they came in, what time they left, what truck they were on. Even the highway patrol and anybody else that came had to have a T-card, because that's our way of tracking accountability. Because that is so important at the end for many different reasons. So we had check-in. Check-in was actually EMS people, and Dr. Clark came down, and she worked one day. So it took several people to do that. Also, we had one of the IMTs that went out there and helped do check-in, Rex Beamer from Gray County. Okay? This is just a smoke plume, and it all goes up to the northeast, and then later on in the day it changes, and I'll explain that in a little bit. Okay? I don't know if you can all read this because it's kind of low, but these are other things that we had to worry about. One of them was 6, 7, 8 o'clock that night, we're standing there, this group that I just told you about. Do we need to move? We're basically pretty much the only ones left in town. And the fire's coming from the north, and it's coming from the west, and now it went around town, and now it's coming from the east. And you can't get out south. So what do? Are we safe where we're at, or do we move out north into the wheat? And there was mixed emotion there, but we ended up staying, which worked out okay. But that was what we were going to do. We were going to move a couple of ambulances out there and make our command out there in the middle of a wheat field. So I'm glad we didn't have to do that. But there are so many people that did so much work during the fire that it's unfathomable. Okay? Fish and Game, Tanner Dixon, who is our local warden, he showed up that night with three other wardens. Would leave for a while, he'd go out and he'd patrol the dirt roads, find out if there's anybody that needed to be evacuated, make sure everybody's safe, give a report to John Ketron. Then he'd go back out, he'd come back in and they'd have a cup of coffee and then they'd go back out. They did that all night, come in saying, what do you need us to do? So, and then they actually did that for about 3 days. And I'm going to tell a story on them that actually, about the second or third night, they were still working, and I think they got into overtime, or I'm not sure what that was, but they were no longer on the clock for the fishing game. So what did they do? They went home, put on their civilian clothes, and they came back. That's dedication. Highway Patrol, there was four or five of them there every day, off and on every day, just trying to help with the highways, closing of the highways, and monitoring. Meade Sheriff's Office showed up that night, Monday night, to help John. I think there were two officers there. Kansas Gas Company came out that night because in the midst of all that fire, we had someone call in and say there was a gas explosion over at Inglewood. So So we called Kansas Gas. They came out, got down there somehow, and I checked that out, and there wasn't anything they could do to that. They just had to let it blow. But Kansas Gas went into Inglewood and started shutting off gas meters because Inglewood was in dire jeopardy. Okay? Northern Natural Gas and Kinder Morgan came down, and there may be others that I don't even know about, but they came down the next day to check their lines to make sure everything was okay. Stopped in at the EOC. We probably had hundreds of people in that EOC each day. By 5:40 on the 6th, there was a half dozen structures at least on fire. Homes were on fire. People were calling in, our homes on fire. You know, at that time we have three fire departments trying to fight all of these fires and save homes. There were more homes on fire probably than we had fire trucks at that time. They could not manage it all. They could not. But they did the best they could. They did an awesome job. We had a couple farmers on the west side of town protecting our new hospital and our town. They were out there disking. Actually, there's some that were up north of town, up in Lexington area, doing the same. They were down south by the state line. Ranchers, farmers were out everywhere with their discs, with their spray rigs. All of them were risking their lives. Just came really close to the fire. Then I called a couple friends of mine by the name of Don Button and Vaughn Lawrence. They are emergency managers from Grant County and Stanton County. And I asked them if they would come and help. And so they started over here. But they got west of town and they couldn't get into town because of the fire and the road was closed. So they sat out there for several hours and couldn't get into town. At this point in time, and I'll show you a map in a little bit, but at 6:48 in the evening, there was absolutely no way out of Ashland. No way. There was fire that came in and it got to the wheat field on the north side, was around on the west side, and then it came around to the creek didn't get to the creek on the east side, but then it was not right straight south of Ashland, but it was south, so there was no way out. These are a couple of pictures of the fire, and these are by Denise Kleckler over west of 283. Looks like a nighttime picture, doesn't it? Mid-afternoon, north of Inglewood. At 7 o'clock that night, I called Kathy Hernandez, our regional Homeland Security Director, and I told her what we were into. I asked her if she would ask for the IMT, the Incident Management Team. Kansas has four or five incident management teams that they train every year to come in and manage big incidents. That's what their job is. Their members are planning, logistics, operations, communications. Each one has his own job. They're a member of, they have 12 people usually in their team. So I called them, she called the state. Finally, at 8:20, we have three fire departments arrive, which means that 8 hours we were alone. 8 hours. Our local fire departments fought the battle. And Don and Vaughn gave up, and they went to Dodge City. The original plan was Ford County had fires and Clark County had fires. So they were going to set up one area command in Ford County, since it was the largest county, biggest population. So Don and Vaughn went to Dodge City to see what they could do to help set up that command at 9:30. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now I want to show you some pictures of Ashland being surrounded. This is on the east side looking west of Ashland. This is north looking towards the golf course. This is looking southeast of Ashland. And I'm not real sure where that one's at. Pretty ominous. And the high school at 5 o'clock in the afternoon is coming into town. You know, there's this wheat field north of town, but there's this gap over on the northwest corner that's grass. And it was an easy route for the fire to come in. So the firemen were out west of town, and then we were trying to get more firemen into that corner to protect Ashland from that corner. We were real worried about it creeping in there. This is from the west looking into the east side of Ashland. The tractors and the discs out there plowing, trying to save our county.
Which day is that? Is that Monday or Tuesday?
This would be Tuesday. This would be Tuesday. The Sitka elevator? They told me it was burning down. It looked like it was burning down, didn't it? This is Deputy Chad Lorenz was up north trying to make sure everybody got evacuated up there. And he was over on I or J in the northeast part of the county. And he went across a wooden bridge that had burnt up and he didn't know it. So luckily he got out, and then I think it was Tanner Dixon came along and got him. He went out and stood in a wheat field somewhere, and then Tanner, I think, is the one that came and got him and brought him in the camp. Pretty scary situation. Another one from the second day. This one's down in Max's area, and it's actually yes, it did. Okay. So, there's some other entities that were really important in the fire. The Ashland High School sat up Monday night, called in volunteer staff, called in students, and they set up an awesome shelter for the, especially for the forestry. Because we ended up with Kansas's firefighters were pretty well busy, and so they ended up having to find someone else to come down and help Clark County. So they, first time in Kansas history, they've called for outside help, and they called the forestry out of Colorado, which was comprised of Colorado, Nebraska, and South Dakota. So those teams stayed at the high school. And I have some pictures of that, and I'll show you that a little bit. The other entity that we don't know too much about, that nobody realizes what they've done, is the city of Mineola. You know that the city of Mineola gave up their two city workers. that night and every day after that. They were down here just, they need to know what to do. The city volunteered them for anything that Ashland needed or the community needed. They also, I understand, made sandwiches and meals every day, brought some of them down to the church camp. But they, Mineola felt really bad that they were spared and the rest of the county was. They tried to do whatever they could. The mayor, she was on top of it. And the other people that we had that were helping us on a daily basis were the weather service. Jeff Hatton, who lives up at Dodge City, would give us weather reports every day, try to keep in touch. He would come down a couple times, but they were invaluable. This actually shows these are, again, smoke plumes, right? And this is coming up. And then these that were the fires that were up north, and I'll show you a time lapse here pretty soon, but they, when the wind shifted, they started coming south. So you see everything heading towards the Ashland City area. Okay. So, I find these maps fascinating. I went through and put a time, and we have three different logs at the EOC. We had the log that they were using when the dispatcher radio communications were taking place. We had a person there logging all of that communication. We have the Ashland Sheriff's Office log for this time period. And then we also have another log for Meade County. So we put three logs together, came up with the time frames. Okay? So down here you'll see that the Starbuck fire entered at 1:45 Monday afternoon. And then up here just west of Englewood at 2:52, and then up here on 283 at 3:20. It was over here at Clausen's at 2:11. And some of those times won't make sense because the fire did strange things. The fire would move one direction faster than another. Part of it has to do with the fuel that it had to consume. And part of it had to do with the wind. And then it started going west at 5 o'clock when that wind shifted. Not only was it going this way, but it also went west. But it arrived on the south side of Ashland at 1848. Remember that? 648, that figure I gave you a while ago? Okay. It was over here in the Sitka area at 544, 553, 530, in that area. So it took 6 hours to go from left to right. Now the one that was up, the fire breaks that were up north were going towards the lake. These were actually going towards the lake to start with, and Tanner evacuated the lake. But then when the wind shifted at 5:01, then they started coming straight to Ashland. And there were more fire outbreaks down in here west of those items because of the embers and the amount of wind that we had, 50-60 mile an hour wind. So these fire outbreaks hit Ashland at 1841. Came around on the it was over here on what is that road? 16 over here, 16 and the highway. It was 620. It was there. Came over here on the east side of Ashland at 1833. It's kind of, the wheat field slowed it down right here. So it bounced around, came over here onto the east side, decided it would consume Ashland on the east side. Within 4 minutes, it was clear over here at Matt Wilson's house. And then on over to Cullen's. So this was over here at 6:30. And remember the one south of Sitka? That was 5:30, 5:50. So it moved really fast and all at once. And they're still trying to protect houses over here.
A question.
Yes.
What hit Matt Wilson's? Did that not come from the northwest across all of that grass?
Yes, it did.
In a hurry.
Yes, it did.
So it didn't come from Ashland. It came.
It
came across.
These fire outbreaks here came across here like that. This is all of this was from the north, from this fire, the fires up here, the outbreaks up here.
Now, you have a 423 mark up there.
That's Jerry Hodges' house.
Okay, I do not know, is that on the east side of 34?
Yes.
Okay, so that had already crossed 34 by 423.
Yes. And I know that's right because it's documented on the logs that they called in and said Jerry's house is gone.
Because that came across north of, because I live in the Lexington area.
Right, you're down in here, right?
Further south.
You're right in here?
Yes, yes.
You're down in here where you got the wheat field around there.
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah. But it moved at different speeds. It had, and it depends on what it had to eat.
All that to the north came across Giles.
Yes.
And all of that's grass. And
all of this.
That I sent my hired man home before it, just before it hit my place, and he got to the county line and ran into the fire, and so that had come across 34 to the north of us and just raced to the southeast, and that's why they. That's why they so soon had to evacuate protection.
That's right.
Because that was all grassland.
There's nothing to stop it here.
Yeah.
In fact, at 1524 would be, 3 o'clock?
324.
Okay.
At the lake.
By 5 o'clock, it would have been south of the correction line. There's corrections on the 34 highway there.
Here?
No, further north. Where that?
It would have been clear south of that by that. Yeah, clear south of that sign, 34, and then clear south of them by 5 o'clock.
It was here at 5 o'clock. Is that what you're saying?
It would have been probably south of that by then, because that's when that truck driver.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Yep. So that whole wall from the lake to there took, when that wind switched, I bet it took, I could have covered that whole country in 2 hours, 3 hours.
Yeah.
Took that whole country out.
Very fast. There was a wreck out here because of the smoke, and EMS responded to it and came back and told me that they had fire. When they first were going to go to Coldwater, and they had fire come up over the ambulance on both sides, so they couldn't go that way. Well, we didn't have a hospital in Ashland now. So they ended up having to come back, clear back up here and up to Mineola. But when they got back in the barn, we looked to see, because they just knew that the paint had blistered on that ambulance and that we had ruined an ambulance. But we didn't. But that's another trial by fire thing. Scared of spills. So. Okay, any other comments on this? I think it's really interesting when you put the timelines in there. And I think it's really interesting that everything got to Ashland at the same time.
One rancher said it burned his 35,000 acres in 50 minutes.
50 minutes. I don't doubt it. All right, so this is the Emergency Operations Center. Okay? And we all look like, sometimes I looked at these today, and they look like we're trying to figure out if anybody knows what they're talking about. But we had numerous visitors. We actually had a couple residents come in, and they were worried about their house burning down. They lived out in the country. So they came in and sat on our furniture over there and just spent a few hours, but that was okay. We had a couple that were in a wreck, and they came in and sat for a while. See, this one looks like Are you serious?
Well, you've never, none of you had ever been through any of this.
So. We had never been through any of this before. This is our first time. So they did awesomely well. And we had maps everywhere. We were drawing everything on maps. We had, over here was the dispatching area, and when we started out, there were 8 radios sitting over here, and 1 dispatcher. And by about Wednesday, Tuesday afternoon, they pulling their hair out, said, you got to do something. So we fixed that. And we got down to 4 on Wednesday morning. That helped a lot. So had a plan, a communications plan by Wednesday morning. But then we had finance in this area, had to input on the computer, and she's over there doing, Allison's doing her charting for media or something. I'm not sure. But this is the log. This is Kayla Young helping Brandy with the log. And then check-in people, this is Kelly Peralta was part of the check-in. And over here is, this is one of the forestry guys from Colorado. I don't know his name, but they would come in and visit periodically or find out what they were supposed to be doing. And this is Trooper Racy that I told you helped with the public information. And then Katie Pryor and Joe Fast. Back here is Alan Radcliffe, who is the head of the IMTs. He actually heads the state IMT teams. And he's from Franklin County. And then not a very good picture of Courtney, but Courtney is over here, and then there's another one over here. So they would come in periodically, and we would trade information. They were set up actually out in the North Bay, and then they moved to the South Bay. And the commissioners came in every day at 9 o'clock, all 3 of them. They were very faithful. And the first day was Tuesday morning. They came in at 9 o'clock, and they had to sign a delegation of authority. And we had always heard stories, I had always heard stories about, you don't want to have the IMTs come in because they just take over and they run everything and you lose control of your town. That did not happen. They came in and they were very nice, very nice. We had a meeting with the commissioners and they signed a delegation of authority, but Clark County always remained in control. But they were helping Clark County. But they're very good. They're very well organized.
Question.
Yes.
Did the firemen lose their repeater?
Yes, they did for a while. On Monday night, their batteries burnt up. And so we called mobile radio. Mobile radio was out that night and fixed it. Yes, they did. You never know what's going to happen to communication.
For how long, then, was that?
Do you remember back in 4 hours, maybe? What? There is a backup system in that they have VHF radios and they have 800 radios. So it's not like they're completely out of the ballgame. And cell phones. Cell phones work most areas. But the commissioners did come every morning to get an update of what was going on, what their plan was, what kind of expenses they had, and asked the commissioners every morning, and they said, so what do you want us to do? And the commissioner said, I want you to save residences, because that's all you're going to do.
Well, you didn't say much about the people who did stay here that saved our town. All of you people that ran all the way around all night long keeping the fire out of town.
The firemen that went around the town, you mean?
And just local people telling them where to go too.
You mean like the firemen or the residents?
The firemen and residents
okay.
that were
telling them where to go.
Patrolling
yeah.
around, just yeah. keeping the fire out.
I think Ashland and Englewood stayed right around the town for all night long and protected it. And the residents did help. There was actually a small fire in the north end of town, but that wasn't much to put out. But I don't know how many stayed. I don't know that I want to ask you guys how many stayed, but I know quite a few stayed.
My pardon did a lot. And
yes, he did.
He saved Degnan's home. I got a call from him at 1 o'clock in the morning. He said, is anything back up that way? He saved our home in King of Landon Lake, along with the road grader, breaking through a fence. He started on the tractor about 3:30.
Yes. He was very diligent about that.
His tractor broke down there by the hospital and went and hopped on his grader. Mm-hmm. And then he went to Carolyn's house, and then at 1:30 in the morning he was back up north of town, stopping the fire from getting into the Tony Mathis facility.
Yeah, he worked really hard. As did many more that you probably will never know about. On the evacuation, we're going to work on that, but when we do an iris alert or the police go out and use their megaphones to do to evacuate, we're never going to do that unless we really, truly need it. I mean, it's not something that we take lightly. So if we say evacuate, there is true danger. Now, I think that in a few months, we're going to have new outdoor warning sirens, and they will have a speaker on them to help them. Okay. But if you get an iris alert or you hear the law enforcement, someone saying evacuate, I highly suggest to not doubt that and get the heck out of town. Because there were some people then that would call other people and say, well, are we supposed to evacuate? And then they say, well, I didn't hear anything, and then so that neither one of them left town. That's a dangerous situation. Because you're going to be like the EOC, you're going to be trapped in town, and then what are you going to do if it comes? You're going to be stuck with us. And we don't want that. We want you to get out of town.
I'd be kind of curious to know how many people now have a bag to grab.
I'd like to know that too. Because I'd really like to work on that and
I think that definitely needs to be something. Having Gordon been so sick for so many years, I've always had, for 16 years, I've had a go bag. It's always packed, and it always has extra batteries and cell phone chargers and all of that stuff.
A pair of shoes.
I've got a pair of shoes, several different changes of clothing, a couple bottles of water, but you never know. And, you know, we all need to keep something like that, but this proved that at least you've got something to get you through the day, maybe through the night.
Yeah, you need to have a 3-day water supply, food for 3 days, clothing, light, medicines, all of that. And there's some cards over here, emergency management cards on the back that talks about disaster kits. There's also on the table an iris alert. If you're not on the iris system, it's free to you. The county pays for it. If you're not on the iris system, there's two different forms over here. One of them is that email address, that website. You go out to there and you can put yourself on. Or if you want me to do that, you fill out the other form and give it to me, and then I'll put you on. So you're on iris. So you get the tornado warnings or the thunderstorm warnings. So you know. Okay? The evacuation notices, you would get those. We need to add that, and the other thing we need to add is for 24 hours. Because within a few hours, people are calling wanting to know, can we come back to town? And we didn't specify a time, but, you know, we learned from our mistakes. So we're going to fix that. So we'll make sure we do a location and a time. Yes? That's been changed. Okay? That's been corrected. Thank you. Any other questions?
Let's fill the livestock, please.
I have a, and Randall may want to tell you better than that, but I understand 6,000 animals. So,
it's a gift that keeps on giving.
I bet that's right.
Not all those animals were euthanized because they had valuable animals inside of them, and, but there's consequences that many people are still experiencing.
We're not done with that yet.
Amplify the evacuation process a little bit more. Who makes that decision? Is it a joint decision? Do you make it? Where does it come from? Is it mandatory?
Well, you know, we can make it mandatory, but is that going to make you leave? I mean, we can, you know, that was a mandatory evacuation, but not everybody left. I mean, we can't make you leave your home. We cannot do that. But that was an that was the EOC call. We did it as a group. Okay.
I know. Yes. I know. Spending time at the high school helping feed the people. The firemen that came in from Colorado and the other states, they had never been to any other fires where a town came together like we came together. I don't think there was one fireman that didn't say, "I have never seen people who are losing things come in and take care of us like you guys are taking care of us."
They were actually deployed. Some were deployed at the end of the week, and then two of the task force were supposed to demobilize on Monday morning. And two of them came in Sunday night to the EOC and said, "So, Millie, you think you could pull some strings?" And I said, "What do you mean? Would you talk to them and see if we could stay a few more days?" They go, "I don't think I can make that fly, but I'll try," because they really did like it. They were you know, they go to places where they're not fed, not given. They bring their tents because sometimes they have to live in their tents and not treated well. And I just cannot fathom that. I don't understand that at all. Other people that we had in the EOC is I don't remember what day they were coming in, but they would come in every day. This one on the right here, that's Kathy Hernandez. That's our Regional Homeland Security Director. Okay, and then Senator Moran came in, and this is the Adjutant General Toffanelli. He's the head of KDEM, Kansas Department of Emergency Management. He was there with every one of them when they came in. He was a repeat visitor. Okay. Governor Brownback came in to sign the state declaration for the fires. And you can see our maps are just everywhere. And Becky's supervising right there. Right?
Yeah.
Senator Pat Roberts was there again with AG. And Kendall's talking to him about something.
That's right.
I'm not sure why. This is, I had to put her in here, because this is Chris Rohrbaugh. She came with the Kansas Forestry. Her job was to do all the bookkeeping for the forestry departments, the task force. She spent days there and nights there taking care of them, because she had to check each one of them in, check each one of them out, the number of hours per day, what they did each hour. I mean, it was a meticulous job. And so we put her in this office by herself, and that's where she was. And when she got done, she stayed for, I think it was a month after that, to help me, because we had the task of doing FMAG, which is the Fire Management Assistance Grant. So she was awesome. She got to stay at the independent living free of charge, and she loved that little room and did well there. These are kind of fuzzy, but these are air photos, a couple of them. But this is the EOC. It's the ambulance barn. And then I apologize. I thought I had some over here. This was completely full of trucks. And some of you may have seen those, but it was just inundated with fire trucks and command vehicles. Busy, busy place. This was our staging. When they check in or check out, we use the back of E-Route to do our checking in. And then when the fire trucks are not going out anywhere, which usually wasn't the case, then they would sit in staging waiting for their next deployment. This is the incident management team. And they came in Tuesday and stayed till Saturday. And we couldn't have done it without them. I mean, we just really couldn't have. And they were great to us, very supportive. Had a lot of ideas. I know a lot of them before they came, which really helped me, you know, but I knew a lot of them before they got there, or some of them before they got there. And they brought three command trailers, and so one of them was communication, one of them was logistics, and the other one, I don't know what it was, but they could work out of those. But most of the time, they ended up working in our ambulance building in those big rooms. It worked better. I think they actually had a couple generator problems, but they ended up most of the time in our building. I wanted to show you the picture of the EOC. There was a dog, but whose dog was that?
Was that the one that was in the picture with Chris?
Yes.
You have to buy a HIPAA if I told you.
Oh. Anyway, some dog came in and decided to be a member of the EOC. These are debriefings. And they held debriefings every morning with all the firemen to explain what the day was going to hold, what your job was for that day, what happened the day before. The forestry guys, they're in there taking notes and this was when we were all outside and they were getting more directions. I think this is when on Wednesday they divided into four divisions, which is more organized, and so they had a task force from Colorado ahead of each division and sent them out to four areas. And I'm not going to show you all those trucks, but there's just lots and lots and lots of trucks. From everywhere. I want to show you the cow. The cow sat at the Inglewood Junction. And there were some people that go, what is the cow? But that's it. It's a communication on wheels. And they bring it, they set it out at a designated point. All the radio traffic, whether it's VHF or UHF or 800, comes into that, and they can put it all together so that everybody's on the same frequency. That's a cow. They also brought 38 handheld radios with them. Okay?
And that's through who?
That's through the state. The state has the cows. KDM, IMTs, is that what you mean?
Yes.
And then there was we ended up with two Chinooks, two Blackhawks, and two Seat airplanes coming in to help put out the fire. There was a debate on where they were going to get the water. and they would not allow them to get it from the lake because it's a historical site. And then they wouldn't let them, they didn't want to let them get it from Prophet Lake. So they're in there discussing, what in the world are we going to do? Plan came up that you go down there on the Cimarron River on Road 19 going south. And down there on the Cimarron River, you go to the, I think it was the right side of it. And you build off, you dig a hole in the river. And it will be self-filling, filling. You know, and it runs into you, it fills back up. And so we tried to find an excavator. Cimarron had one. They gave us free of charge. They brought it down one night. The next morning, they went out and built that hole in the river. And the helicopters, part of the time, filled from that hole. But they also filled from Prophet Lake. I'm not sure how all that happened. Some of that's kind of a mystery that you don't want to know about. So,
yeah. It wasn't the state that said you couldn't use Prophet Lake, or was it the helicopters that thought they couldn't?
It wasn't the helicopters, it was the state.
The state.
The state.
That's crazy.
Well,
I'm sorry, but I think that's crazy.
I know. But there was
it's
the way it is. And I don't know if you want to... Okay. Have you ever seen one of those load? Yes? Okay. Can you see it? It's kind of a small picture. This is Prophet Lake. They can carry 600 pounds in that bucket. Show you a couple more pictures of this is Englewood, and the purpose of this picture is to show you how close the fire came to Englewood. Okay, here's the highway going south. Here's the fire. See, it came up. There's a wheat field out there, but it came up on the north, and then it did what it did in Ashland, and that is it turned around and it tried to sneak in the east side of Englewood. This is another Englewood. Okay, and this is the highway here going south. But there's the farm. Englewood, during all of this, ran out of water. One of the reasons they ran out of water was because the fire department used all the water fighting the fire. This over here is the east side of Ashland. That's how close the fire was. This is the west side of Ashland. And right here is our new hospital, and here's how close that fire got. And this is the north side. This week really did, really helped a lot. Okay, so some statistics. We had five test force teams. And that means, a task force team means it's made up, according to them, made up of different trucks. Pumpers, tankers, engines. And they were from Nebraska, Colorado, and South Dakota. There were 34 trucks and 91 men, forestry men that came in. Two Chinooks, two Blackhawks, and four fixed wing. We had 40 mutual aid. We had 40 mutual aid. That means 40 departments in Kansas came down to help. Multiple trucks from each department. They came as far as Kansas City, Coffeyville, up the northern border. It's amazing where all they came from. They had 70 trucks and 173 men. We actually had some... Three men come from Oklahoma. They didn't have a truck, but they called on one when they got here. And Clark County had 25 trucks and 63 personnel. So that's a grand total of 129 trucks and 327 fire personnel. And the others is farmers. Clark County Road and Bridge were out there. You know, all the others that were out there. Countless hundreds of people out there helping command this fire. We had 425,000, and you're going to hear different figures, but I calculated it as best I could. Some of the maps are not quite right. 425,000 acres burned in Clark County. And 4,100 miles of fence, there's a way to figure that, and so it's close. 108 outbuildings destroyed and 13 were damaged, and then 31 homes were destroyed and 6 were damaged. So 6,000 acres. That's if anybody wants to know how I figured the fence mileage, that's it. This is our cost for the fire, without the firemen and the fire trucks. $44 million. Okay, now, the dwellings, I can't imagine having homes that burnt up or any other structures that burnt up. But they total $1,356,000. And then road and bridge, the bridges and the guardrails, the culverts, is over $500,000 in damage. And then the deputy car, and then we have the electric. You know, look what CMS Electric and Southern Pioneer lost. And they don't get that money back from anywhere that I know of. And then the fencing. And I'll tell you why. We applied for a public assistance grant 2 or 3 months after the fire. Public assistance grant would help pay CMS Electric, help pay Southern Pioneer, the city of Ashland. That's what the public assistance grant. We came up to $2,100,000 for that. Well, the break point is that the state has to come up with, there were seven FMAG entities in the state that had fires that qualified for FMAG. And in those seven, you had to come up with $4.1 million for public assistance grant. We came up with 2.1, and I don't know that anybody else came up with anything. So that goes. This is our FMEG grant, and the numbers may not be, they're probably not exactly right because they would change on a weekly basis. Chris would come up with some more things at the end when she was working in Hutchison. But the bottom line is that the cost of the firemen, all of the firemen, it would have cost $250,000 to pay them. And the equipment, $692,000. And then paid personnel are the, we did have some services come that were paid. Cali County, some of the bigger fire services, they pay their employees. That's over in the $59,000. And so our FMAG totaled $1 million. Now, the government will pay for, we have to meet 25% of that, which is, they say that we're in good shape there. The FMAG will pay for the paid, they have to pay the paid personnel, we have to pay that. They have to pay, reimburse for all of that equipment, $692,000. But the volunteers will not get reimbursed for their time. But everything else. It's kind of where that is. And I don't know how long it's going to take us to get that. It took Barber County and the Anderson Creek Fire, it took them a year. So we'll see. Oh, there's the public assistance grant that I was telling you about a while ago that didn't fly. Now, here is the Starbuck fire that they've drawn out. And most of that is in Clark County. We are the largest fire in Kansas history. This is over at the school. This is, they had a home over there. The Red Cross brought in the cots and they had the library. They set up, this is a really neat thing. They had snacks out there all the time, or meals, the meals. You'd go in there and the firemen are playing cards or playing games, and there were some kids in there sometimes playing with them, and they had a TV so they could watch the ball games. So they were doing okay there. And this is part of the volunteer the donations. This is at the fair building.
It had been at the school and it got moved to the fair
building.
What? That had been at the school.
It was at the school and it got moved to the fair building. And now this was Englewood. Englewood had the same issue. Truckloads of donations coming in and those ladies are sorting away. I think you've all seen those. And then I have houses. Oh. Where did it go? That tractor, anyway. That was Clausen's ex-tractor. Okay, here. This is where I want to be. I love that picture. That's Miracle's kid. I think learning how to play a game with one of the forestry men. I did. I wanted to show you this one. There's Ashland. Now, and God only knows why we got through the state. Cemetery. And there we go. This is the cross at Wilson's now, made out of used barbed wire. Yeah. I think that's awesome. And there's actually a video, and I'm not going to, because it's running late, I won't play it, but there's a video out there on YouTube of Mount Jesus Cross being put back up. And that's it. So, bottom line is, there was a whole lot of people working together. Thank you.
Millie, what was the count on the hay trucks that came in?
Did
you have the idea?
A count on the haystack?
Yeah, how many, how many trucks brought hay?
I've asked many times and nobody can come up with a figure. So I have no idea.
I think they were coming so fast and furious. I know
they couldn't
over
keep
the Jordan and